The subject for this evening talk is forgiveness. And if you will forgive me, and I will not wear this thing, I promise to speak really, really loud. A few years ago, I saw a movie called The Name of the Game, or in Hebrew, I think it was Shema Mishak. And in this movie, there was this character, psychiatrist, woman, that was in a very, way, was forced or tricked, more accurately, into committing a murder, into murdering someone. She didn't know. She was being tricked all alone. It was a big, big plot, very complicated. At the end of this big story, she shot the man that tricked her, made her fall in love with him and used her and did many, many manipulations. And she simply shot him and killed him. And I remember that the scene that followed was her talking to a friend of hers and telling her, "I finally forgave myself. I forgive myself," she said. And I remember how, moved and even shocked I was by that option of forgiving myself. Even though she committed the worst crime, killing, in the movie, she managed to find the inner courage to forgive herself. And this phrase works with me ever since, because all too often, I think, we are committing much worse crimes than killing someone, and yet we don't find the place within to forgive ourselves. There is a story in the teachings of the Buddha, in the sutras. It talks about Angulimala, who was also a murderer, very fierce one. And this man took a vow to kill, I think it was 1,000 people. And each person he killed, he cut one of the fingers off and hang it around his neck as a necklace. And the meaning of the name Angulimala, mala, is like a necklace, and anguli is thumb or finger. People were very, very scared when they heard that this murderer, Angulimala, is coming near their village. But as the story goes, one person was not afraid. It was the Buddha. And he actually walked toward him one day. And people were trying to convince him not to do that. They said to him, He means it. He's going to kill you, because it tends to be that Angulimala managed to kill 999 people and he had one person left to be killed. And he said, "The first person that will come towards me, I'll kill him." And it was the Buddha. think what I like mostly about this story that goes on after the Buddha was approaching Angulimala, and Angulimala was really, really stunned by someone approaching him and not afraid of him, and there was a conversation between them. And as the story goes, at the end of the conversation, Angulimala changed his heart, even a little bit, just to start practicing. And by practicing, he became an arhant, which is a term for someone that is awakened. But what I like the most about that story, or one of the points that the Buddha saw through Angulimala, he did not see the murderer. He did not see what everyone else was seeing, and as a reaction were afraid, very understandably. But he saw through that mask. He might have seen the hatred, he might have seen the fear within Angulimala. He might have seen the different causes and conditions that made Angulimala to be that murderer that he was. And the Buddha was not afraid. And his approaching Angulimala was, to me, a kind of an offering. Like, here I come to you, towards you. I offer you something that is very precious. I offer you the opportunity to be seen, really seen, as you really are. If we take the word forgiveness in English, we can divide it into two words that speaks for themselves. Forgive. And it's again that movement, and I think I've been talking a lot in the groups and in the one-to-ones about this movement that for me is a very strong symbol of the inner change. It's the movement from something that is closed into something that is open. The movement from a fist into an open hand. And when we try to connect into the feeling we get, when we just say to ourselves the word forgiveness, I think within that feeling envelops this sense of openness. Something is being melted, even a little bit, just that. Forgiveness, on the other hand, can be something very, very difficult. All too often, we feel there is a strong sense of, he did that to me, therefore I feel that, and I don't even want to hear about forgiveness. Or, they hurt me so much that forgiveness is really out of the question. And it's really important to notice this and to see and to look within with eyes of wisdom, not to force ourselves into doing anything, including this movement of opening. It's rather something that is organic, that is coming with other processes that are happening to us. And one of the things that can help soften the grip of tightening around an identity that is being hurt is inviting wisdom inside. And just as the Buddha did with Angulimala, if we can allow ourselves to see, but really see, deeply, into the ways that make things happen, make people act the way they do, take a good look at ourselves. The choices we make in life, the different behaviors we have, even the different feelings we have. We can sometimes see very clearly that all of it is conditioning. Maybe it's coming out of what we've been taught in school, or the way our teachers were treating us, or teaching us, or the way our parents treated us when we were young. Maybe it's also, it can come from simply our genes, the way we are structured. Some people have this preference over that preference, and all too often it has to do with simple biology. Some people like hot weather, some people like cold weather. Some people like to be around other people. Some people prefer to be alone. Some people are talkative, some are silent. How much choice do we have in there? When we hurt someone, can we see, can we really, really look and examine into the situation with the eyes of wisdom and see what really took place there? What really was going on there? If I'm standing in a line, ou patrolling, I don't know how to say it in English.
HMO.
Oh, thank you. Yes. And, you know, in Israel, always somebody that comes with just a little question. You can stand in line for a whole hour, but there's always someone that has to ask us just little questions, you know. And okay. And to me, I'm fascinated by this place, because whenever I go there, I see so many different types of people that almost all of them echo in me. I see the impatient woman that has to get to work, and I see the old lady that just comes there for fun, nothing else to do. And I see the high school kid that has been really, really rude to somebody else, a grown-up man, and I see the grown-up man that is trying to educate him, you know, and all that. And of course, you know, Israel being Israel, I don't know how it is in the States, but here it's like happening all the time. And like three different women come and with just a question in the midst of all that. And it's really interesting to just sit back and see the different tendencies that people have, different reactions, that they have towards a given situation. Last time I was pas trop lame. There was exactly this high school kid that was really, really rude to someone. And this young man, he was maybe around, I don't know, 16, he was accompanied by his father, and I saw them both when they walked in. And the father looked very, very authoritarian, like very strong figure of someone that is knowing how to and saying it very clearly. And then the father left and the boy stayed there, and he was trying to sneak in before somebody else, and that other person got really, really upset, and some words were going on. And I could see how this young man, the high school kid, reacted. It was just a continuation of the conversation he had before with his father. He just took the whole thing and put it on top of this poor man that had, you know, no idea why he's been treated the way he was. And I'm sure when we take a good look at ourselves, in our lives, we can see many, many times that we've been moved to react the way we did because these tendencies in us are very, very strong. And how, what brings about these tendencies, if not conditioning and genes? When we start to look at ourselves in this way and at other people in this way, it helps soften our grip around they didn't do something that is okay. It's not okay to be rude. When we start to understand the background behind the behavior, it helps a lot in terms of just letting go, just doing this movement. And if we can apply the same wisdom to ourselves, all the better. We can look at events in our lives when we hurt someone and we feel really, really guilty for that. I have a feeling most people don't like to hurt other people. Just a feeling I have. But most people feel bad when they know somebody's been hurt because of something they said or did. If we can call into our minds a situation like that, that occurred, an event like that, and see the different streams that led us into behaving the way we did, maybe we can call upon and starting to be friends with forgiveness ourselves, towards ourselves. You know, it always strikes me to see how we treat ourselves. It's like, on the one hand, we take really, really good care of ourselves, so we won't be like somebody would not take advantage of me. You know, like, this is my place, or this is my food, or this is my cushion here. We're really, really careful about our space and about our sort of my things, yeah. And we try to look for ways to enhance this feeling of I, me, mine. On the other hand, we are so quick to jump in and judge ourselves and give ourselves such a hard time. Some people actually use whip, you know, like shot, like mental one. I don't mean real one, but like really, really bad. It can go on actually for years. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have said that. You know, the guilt, the shame that comes with a package deal. So on one hand, there's this self-cherishing. On the other hand, it feels to me like babies in an orphanage, you know, with a big lack in love and warmth. That's the way we very often treat ourselves. In the last, I think it was a week ago, Yom Kippur, I went to the synagogue where I'm living. I live in a little village. In Hebrew it's Mushav. It's not that romantic. near Jerusalem. And I went to the synagogue for the prayers, Yom Kippur. And most of the people in my Mushav are from Yemenite. So the prayers there were in Hebrew, they promised me, but it didn't sound like Hebrew at all. So I was just sitting there, didn't understand a thing. I was trying to follow, but couldn't. So, you know, I was starting a conversation with a woman that was sitting next to me. You know, sort of the women are locked up in this room upstairs, and there's time to do many things there, and talking, and a lot of old women, Yemenite women, were there. And I was asking her, I noticed that there were actually two synagogues in this little village. They were maybe 10 meters apart. And I just went to the first one. You know, I didn't, just went in. But I asked her, what's going on? Why is there two synagogues in this really little place? And she said to me, oh, it's an old story. It's an old story. So I said, well, is it like a difference in the prayers? Because I was thinking, oh, maybe there it's in Hebrew and so I can understand. She said, no, it's the same, it's the same. Are the people that are going there, I mean, they are from another place? I said, no, they're from the Mushav, they're from the village. Said, oh, so why is two different synagogues? Said, oh, it's an old story. Okay. After some time, I guess she got also bored, she started telling me a little bit more about that. And apparently there was a split. No one really remembers why. There was a split between some people in the village, and they went ahead and built a new synagogue 10 meters away. Can you imagine? Like, it looks like one thing, but it's not. It's two different Ezrat Nashim, two different things. Okay, cool. Apparently, just before Yom Kippur, there is a month of Slichot, which is in Hebrew, it's the Hebrew term for forgiveness. Slicha is forgiving. And it's a month of prayers that people go really early in the morning, like maybe 4, right? And say prayers that has to do with, I'm not even sure what, but it's called Slichot, forgiveness. But I'm sure it has to do with some kind of connection to the energy of forgiving. That's what it sounds like, right? Well, it turned to be that to do these prayers, you need to have a minyan, right? Which is 10 men. If it's not 10 men, you can't do the prayers. So guess what happened? People actually woke up to be in time, 4 o'clock, in the synagogue. But both synagogues could not have a minyan. So they couldn't pray. Forgiveness prayers. Yeah. That was my reaction. What? I mean, I was actually more thinking about the 4 o'clock business in the morning. From outside, it looks really, really strange, not to say ridiculous. But from the inside, the old women, the old Yamanite women that were telling me the story, they didn't see the, you know, what I saw. They said, well, it's an old story, and that's the way it is, and that's the way it's probably always going to be. And that's it. And to me, it just seemed so obvious to see this physical separation to start with, like two different places, and then the separation in the emotion that happened when I'm in this group and you are in that group. Can be no difference between them, but still the feeling that I'm here and you're there. And there's an old story that you don't even remember, but you vow not to forget. Forgiveness is a state that calls for movement, for liquidity, you know. It's a movement of the heart. The heart opens. It cannot stay in the black and white realm anymore. It has to include more colors. It's actually a movement from a place of stagnation. You understand stagnation? No? Kibbon. Into something more soft, open, vast. Sometimes into something that we don't know what it is or what its borders are. I think the most favorite story of mine is the story of the Buddha's enlightenment, awakening. And not the actual story of how he sat under the tree and everything that went on there, but actually the story of what brought him into doing that. And apparently the Buddha was practicing a very strict, vigorous ascetic practices for some years. He's been learning with the most famous, advanced, skillful teachers in his time. And he's been through all of these practices. Like, he's been starving himself in order not to get stuck into senses, pleasures. The descriptions go really, really severe on that. I think he was feeding on like few grains of rice a day, and what it says in the sutras is that he was so skinny, so thin that you could see his bones, I mean to his skin, and you can see the spine, thank you, here, and his hair fell and all kind of, because he was so you know, doing this practice so strongly and so diligently, and he really, really believed that that's the key for happiness. He was doing all kind of ascetic practices like that. Ascetic, you understand the word? It's a sagfanu. But guess what? It didn't happen. He wasn't enlightened. And he wasn't the kind of guy who would stop. Even though he made the most advanced, the most progress on this path, he probably didn't have the ability to fool himself. So he reflected. He said, I do all these practices for so long and I'm still not free. What's going on? And then a memory came into his mind. A memory of him, the age of 5, sitting under an apple tree. It was the time of the harvest, and his father, the king, was doing ceremonies, harvest ceremonies. And probably they just left the young boy to be under the tree. And the memory of this experience of sweetness and calm and freedom that he was feeling there made him think or feel or remember what's important in life, what's really his aim, what he's up to. And it seems to me, by reading the story, that this memory triggered something that was deeply within him, unrevealed yet. And it made him see immediately the value in that. And by that, take the courage to leave behind his old practice that he was doing, this really ascetic, rigorous practice that he was doing. And by that, mind you, lose a lot of credit and respect from the surroundings. But yet he went with what he saw clearly. And to me, it's such a beautiful story because it tells me more than everything else about this movement of flexibility. Once you see where your heart is, you just can't move away from there. It might take time, but... And to me, it's the same movement. It's the same movement, the same that opening, moving away from something that is very rigid and fixed, and we are sure it's like that and it's going to be like that forever. So many times we base our feelings, our judgments of others on the way they treat us, the way they behave towards us. It's really interesting to pay attention to that. When I start paying attention to that, I got really upset to see how much of my feeling are conditioned by somebody else's behavior towards me. If someone is nice to me, immediately I like him. If somebody is not nice to me, immediately I don't like him. If someone so-so, immediately I'm so-so. You know, why? It's interesting. So much is going on around this I, this me, like in relation to what is happening to me. If somebody hurt me, God forbid, I will not forgive. You know, for 20 years I can be stuck in this place of holding grudges against someone that might have said something sometime because of different thoughts that he had or different feelings or different emotions, and it triggers, it touches this place within, inside us, that it's so sensitive. Immediately it's like, oh my God, he said something about me that is not nice. That's it. I'm done with this person. You know, I don't want to hear. In my family, it's quite a custom, by the way. It's a family tradition not to forgive. Yeah. My grandfather, God bless his soul, came from Lithuania. That's his, was his explanation of this quality. He had a neighbor about his age, came from the same little town he came from many years ago to Israel. And one day, he caught that neighbor mixing water with the milk he was selling to people. So his neighbor was cheating, right? That's it. I think it was maybe 60 years after that. They both died, yeah. Never spoke a word to each other. Like, no way, you know. Neighbors, so many years. The story was long forgotten. It was I who dug, you know, was digging into the story to understand what was going on. Why doesn't he seem such a nice man and they look so much alike? Why don't they speak, you know? Oh, it was an old story, you know. Oh, okay. And the emotions around it, just, you know, Modevic collided and stay there, and that's it, you know, and you don't even think about it anymore, and you think everything is fine, but actually not, because when this happens within our inner life, it means a part of ourself is not alive anymore. There is this stuckness, there is this stubbornness, and we cut off parts of ourselves by not opening up, not allowing, not even willing to see what's there. Now, forgiveness has many layers. It's like many seasons. It's not a yes or no deal. It's not a 100% or zero deal. It's something that is much more full than that. Somebody hurt us and we don't find anywhere within ourselves any place that is soft, that we can invite this energy in, this tendency, this word in, it's better to try again than to be stuck there in the no situation. It might even be 1% of okay, I might consider that as a possibility. It's way, way better than this rigidity. And it's fine not to forgive completely. It's totally okay to forgive 10%, 20%, 25.5%. But to try again and again to invite this quality into our lives. I want to read something in Hebrew. That I read in Women Who Run with Wolves. In Hebrew it's Ratzotim Zevim. She says, Slicha eina kni'a. Zo achlota mudat lachdol letapeach tina. והיא כוללת שמיטת חוב וויתור על ההחלטה הנחושה להשיב מידה כנגד מידה. אין משמעה שעליכן לוותר על הגנתכן, אלא על הקור שלכן. אחת הצורות העמוקות של הסליחה הינה להפסיק לנדות את האחר, לחדול, להרחיק, להתעלם, לנהוג בקרירות ובהתנשאות. סליחה היא מעשה של יצירה ובריאה. So I think she touches into the core of being, you know, cold. Just, and we think, I'm not forgiving and that's it. But actually, parts in us are slowly dying away, becoming rigid, becoming stiff. The Dalai Lama keeps mentioning this very, very simple truth that all of us just want to be happy. None of us want to suffer. If we can just remember this, when we invite this quality of forgiveness, when we think about somebody that did us harm, with the basic heart of remembering that he or she just want to be happy, just like us. They're not inherently bad. ואיך אתן יכולות לדעת אם סלחתן? במקום לחוש זעם על התקרית, אתן חשות עצב. אתן נוטות לחמול על האדם במקום לחוס עליו. אתן נוטות לחוש שלא נותר לכם דבר לומר על התקרית כולה. אתן מבינות את הסבל שהניע את העבירה מלכתחילה. אתן מעדיפות להישאר מחוץ לתחום הזה. אינכן מחכות לדבר. דבר לא חסר לכן. אתן חופשיות ללכת. I want to end up with a poem that I love, one of my favorite poems, by a Zen master, Thich Nhat Hanh. That incorporates the wisdom, the seeing, the understanding. And by that, invites forgiveness. It's called, Please Call Me By My True Name. Do not say that I will depart tomorrow. Even today, I am still arriving. Look deeply. Every second I am arriving. To be a bud on a spring branch. To be a tiny bird with still fragile wings, learning to sing in my new nest. To be a caterpillar. Understand caterpillar? Zachar? To be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower. To be a jewel hiding itself in a stone. I still arrive in order to laugh and to cry, to fear and to hope. The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that is alive. I am a mayfly metamorphosing on the surface of the river, and I am the bird that swoops down to swallow the mayfly. I am a frog swimming happily in the clear water of a pond. And I am the grass snake that silently feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks. And I am the arms merchant, selling deadly weapons to Uganda. I am a 12-year-old girl, refugee on a small boat, who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo with plenty of power in my hands. And I am the man who has to pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom all over the earth. My pain is like a river of tears, so vast it fills the four oceans. Please call me by my true names, so I can hear all my cries and laughter at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. Please call me by my true names, so I can wake up and the door of my heart could be left open, the door of compassion. Let's sit silently for a few moments.